Martha Stewart here. As a devoted pet parent and culinary expert, I ensure my cats and dogs are fed the finest nutrition. My premium pet food features air-dried protein inclusion, whole fruits and vegetables, and never any fillers. Martha Stewart pet food formulas make it so easy to satisfy the dietary needs and taste preferences of your pets. Now all six delicious formulas are 50% off. And there's convenient home delivery on Chewy.com. No more lugging heavy bags, and your pets will thrive on the optimal nutrition and great taste.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My whole life, I've been told this one story about my family, about how my great-great-grandmother was killed by the mafia back in Sicily. I was never sure if it was true, so I decided to find out. And even though my Uncle Jimmy told me I'd only be making the vendetta worse, I'm going to Sicily anyway. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ryan gets, how many little texts do you get from me in a day?
I don't get any little texts. I get a lot of big texts. Long texts. I have to scroll to read them.
Hello, everyone. This is Martha Stewart, and you're listening to the Martha Stewart Podcast. We had just finished a wonderful lunch with a whole group of garden-minded people, and I said, Kevin Sharkey and Ryan McAllister, please join me on my podcast. And guess what? They accepted, and they are sitting with me here in the library of Maple Avenue. Thank you guys for doing this at such short notice.
It was an invitation we couldn't refuse.
Absolutely.
Especially after the delicious lunch you gave us. So.
Yeah. Well, you could not refuse.
We weren't allowed to refuse.
I was not going to let you refuse. But we had a very nice lunch. And Ryan, thank you so much, because Ryan and I and several other people have been growing the most incredible vegetables this year in our new beautiful raised bed vegetable garden that used to be the donkey paddock. And so today we had for lunch, we had a green risotto with fresh peas and beautiful braised kind of sauteed artichoke hearts, everything from the garden. And we also started with a large bowl of borscht, beet soup. And what a delicious borscht with
really
that
good
smashed potato on top and then a dill-infused sour cream. And then we had, for dessert, the pièce de résistance, which were two sorbets. One was blackcurrant, because I grow blackcurrants, unusual because most gardeners don't have blackcurrants. And in many states, blackcurrants are forbidden because they have some
Like a blister rust for a long
rust,
time, or they
yes
thought it was. They thought it was a vector, and it's not.
Oh, it's not. Okay,
a blister
so now
rust? Yeah. What is that? Pines like a mildew?
On fir trees.
It was something that was killing the evergreens. They thought they tied them together, and
I
it was
see
outlawed for decades.
So now, but I've always had black currants. So,
skirting the
contraband. And I haven't seen any rust on any of my evergreen trees. I've seen other things, other trees, but not on evergreens. So Kevin and Ryan are both very interested in horticulture, very, very interested in houseplants, garden plants, landscape design. Kevin even admitted at lunch when we went around the table describing our past that he had even contemplating becoming a landscape designer. Why don't you talk about that, Kevin?
I always had a garden when I was young, and I loved growing things from seed. I remember the first thing I grew from seed was Sweet William, and I love Sweet William to this day. So I got a job at the Arnold Arboretum in Massachusetts in Boston so that I could really get to experience all facets of the whole landscape architecture program pursuit. And after doing every possible job that a young teenager could do at the Arboretum, I decided that architecture was more what I was really interested in. I loved being in the outside, but I had too much curiosity. I needed to explore a bunch of other things. So, but it was great to work at an Arboretum, and I would encourage anybody who lives near an Arboretum to become a member of that Arboretum and also to visit it frequently. And most of them offer incredible education programs and things like that. It can make the difference in a young person's life one way or the other. So it wasn't as if I abandoned it, because I know that one day I will have a garden.
But then he went off and became an interior designer, working with Sister Parish and Albert Hadley.
Yep.
And then came to work for us. But at all times, Kevin has always been a flower arranger. He has always had a lot of plants, orchids especially, in his own home. He is now branched out in his beautiful apartment to much larger specimen house plants.
Yes.
Describe that a little bit.
Well, you know, when I first moved into the apartment, I had giant philodendron, is it Monstrosa?
The split giant leaf ones. One.
The ones that we have now, because we're the babysitters.
We split it up.
We get what Kevin doesn't want, which I always take because I know that we can make something out of these disasters.
I remember I started working for Martha in the magazine, and she, you know, one of the many great pieces of advice she gave us when we were styling pictures was, I don't want to see a picture of a bunch of things. You have to put some life into it. So that you do with plants and pets and things like that. So my apartment is quite large and it gets a ton of light. And so when I moved in there, I got a philodendron monstrosa. It seems so strange to say that.
That's two different plants, yes.
Okay.
You just got philodendron.
Philodendron. Okay, great.
The split leaf, just say that.
It got
split
so
leaf,
big.
The split leaf, yeah.
Split leaf there
is different.
Okay. I remember when it got so big, you were actually attaching it to the ceiling.
I did. And with fishing twine, thumbtacks.
Thumbtacks.
And what was that horrible storm we had? Sandy? Mm-hmm. Was it Sandy?
Oh, yes.
The way I knew Sandy was really happening was I went to the living room window and I looked outside and the Hudson River, I couldn't figure out where it ended because it didn't end. It came right into our building. But I also, the building was twisting, torquing. And so the tacks were coming out of the ceiling. So anyway, now I'm into palms. And I'm not having a ton of success, I don't think. But I'm trying. I have a source at called Foliage Garden where I buy the palms. But I don't know if everything's right in the right place. It gets tons of light. I just have to figure out.
I think even though it's been rainy and gray and hot, I don't think the palms are, they don't get enough air.
They're not great indoors.
They do not like air conditioning.
Oh, really?
It's too cold.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
They do not like air conditioning.
I don't like hot.
Yeah. I don't like. There's a few exceptions, but yeah, palms. Think of where they grow.
But there are other plants that would do better. You should look around at my plants, and there might be something here that he could.
I do feel guilty when a plant dies. It's like I'm responsible for the life of this plant. And when Martha introduced me to this quote, you know, not that long ago about, you know, do you feed your plants? And people don't even know you have to feed them. And she said, well, did you eat? And then the plant has to eat. So you're responsible.
And the plant has to drink.
Right. So
I cannot eat in the morning unless I look at all my plants and see if they need anything first.
So in good conscience, you need to get
them. It's the same with
them.
My pets. Yep. I mean, my cat gets fed first, then my dogs, then my plants, then I.
Yeah.
That's it.
Well, I have a feeling I'll be making another contribution to the library of beautiful plants up here in Bedford.
Oh, that's why you cleared the whole table for the rest of Kevin's stuff.
Did you see how well the palms are doing that I just transplanted on the green terrace outside the green room?
We just looked at those. Yeah.
The fan palms.
Mm-hmm. Did you see how beautiful they are?
They've leafed out. They're green again.
All in a week.
Mm-hmm. Do they do that, though? Do the leaves come out that quickly?
Mm-hmm. Well, in this kind of weather.
Is their weather.
We're experiencing here in Bedford, temperatures were in the 90s with 90%+ humidity.
For days on end.
For days and days. And yesterday, 10 inches of rain in the neighborhood.
Was it really 10 inches?
10 inches. Yes, it was really bad. Bad, but palms love it. It's their thing.
They sulk inside all winter long, and they don't push out any leaves or anything. Right. They just sit there.
Well, these were not inexpensive palms. I felt really guilty riding down here with Martha because she has the most beautiful date palms. The forms are amazing. Is that what they are? Date palms?
Yes, aren't they beautiful?
Oh my God, they're so beautiful. I have three date palms that are just screaming to be let out. So I think
what about your terrace?
The terrace is doing really well because I did exactly what you told me to do. I put two I have two planters on my terrace. Unfortunately, they're very shallow, but my terrace is big. So I put one cycad in each, and then underneath it, I planted Creeping Jenny. And so it's hanging out.
That's all the Samachia, right?
Yes, Samachia. And I have a feeling I asked you today because your Lysimachia has perfect green. Mine has some brown around the edges. And well, I've been in Europe for a couple of weeks.
Too dry at one point.
It can be dry or brown. You told me kind of discolored. Okay,
they're discolored and brownish. Yeah.
And then it's probably dry.
It's on the terrace. You get all that extra exposure, sun, wind, so it's from that. So keep it watered more.
So that's what I'm having success with so far. And the cycads seem to be very, very happy. I got them on the flower market for $65 each, which was great. And I bought two backups just in case. You know what I'm dying to see? I can't wait to go up to the pool garden. I want to see all my...
we put your bromeliads in.
Bromeliads. That's a success story.
Oh, they have been looking so
nice.
And
they fit perfectly.
Oh, good.
These are bromeliads that are kind of grayish and greenish patterned leaves, and they're round leaves.
The round ones are in a bunch of the planters around the pool. And then you remember the other ones from Trade Secrets years ago, the gray chalice-y ones?
Yep.
We put those in the front. Two of them, I think, right in front. The ones with the pink flowers.
Yeah, those are beautiful.
So I'm happy to be home because I did worry that my doormen were watering too much. I do it once a week. I don't know if that's enough, but that's what I do.
Generally, your plants do very well, and your orchids do very well.
Yeah, I mean, I was boarding my orchids somewhere for a very long time, and I wonder if that's why they did well, because I think if I kept them in my apartment, it might be too dry.
You can't keep them in your apartment. But now Kevin has a section of one of my benches on which I placed all his boarding orchids, and they look okay.
They
just have to be fed once a week. And they have to be, you might have to come up and repot some of them.
I was so mortified because your orchids are insane.
Yes, they are.
And one day I came up here and the cattleyas were all over the sitting room. And I was just like, it's insanity how you get the greenest leaves and they're so clean and so shiny. And mine look like a dented Kia just showed up. So anyway, I'm hoping by osmosis that my plants will get better. But I am a big fan of houseplants.
So you can see what our conversation veers towards oftentimes. And we do talk about plants. We do talk about the care of plants. And we do talk about our love of plants. And it's fun. Now, I want to ask Ryan about his own personal garden. So describe the whole place and what it was like when you got it.
Since I have so much here to work with, do I want a large yard or a small yard? So the house is not small. It's four stories. It's big. So the front yard isn't that big. And the backyard's small enough for me to play in and do stuff, but I don't have to take care of tons of stuff. I can go mow the whole backyard in like under an hour.
It's easy. You have grass?
You still have grass?
Wow. I ripped everything out of the front, all the grass.
Yeah.
And then the backyard, I ripped all the edges out and made beds. And then the next year, I took them in like another foot or stuff. And I want to continue more. I was told not to, but I'm going to do it.
Yeah, but that front,
by whom?
But the front yard. Now, Ryan is at Ryan McAllister on Instagram. Are you on Threads now?
Not yet.
You're always
you did
the
it
first
before
one
they
there.
Even let people do it. They asked you. They were sending you like, why are you not on us?
That's what I did. I got some requests. Why aren't you on Threads?
How much time is that going to take?
No, it's not going to take time. I'm on Threads. I don't want to get onto that yet, but I'm only going to do tips.
Okay.
Tip number one. I'm on tip number five.
And it's just a quick tip, like
a quick
thing.
Tip, a good homekeeping tip.
Yeah.
So it's going to be fun because I love doing my
tips.
Like
one a day or whenever you want.
Whenever I feel like it. So, okay, your backyard, your front yard is so colorful. It's a mixture of shrubs, bulbs, and plants,
yeah,
right?
I go crazy with the bulbs, but I ripped all the grass out and then I mixed it. Like I'll try different things that aren't supposed to go together. So I interplanted roses and azaleas in the whole thing. It was around the same time we started doing all the azaleas here and we were talking about it. I'm like, all right, so I put them all there and I make sure they're all different kinds so they bloom over a longer period of time.
Nice.
Like, it's nice having a whole garden that's color like one color at once, but it's I can stretch
What's
it over
What's blooming
a week.
In it right now in that front yard?
In the front, there's not much because it's been hot. Some of the roses are blooming and the lilies are just finishing and I have a few dahlias that are popping up and stuff. So it's kind of like half and half right now, but the sun kind of pushed everything quickly. And
great. Everything.
But the azaleas lasted for a long time, and I have tons of bulbs in there. That's mainly in spring. There's tulips and daffodils and all kinds of little bulbs that come up. There's gladiolas that are just starting to bloom right now.
Can I ask you a question? And this is a question for both of you. So today when we were doing the garden tour, Adam asked a question about alliums, and mm-hmm. you said something about tulips, or somebody, it's a bulb, obviously, mm-hmm. but they're not like daffodils. They don't get better every single year, or do they?
They what, don't.
What? Alliums. Yeah, allium.
No, they fade. Tulips fade quickly. Like, you get a good year of tulips, sometimes the second year, depending on the variety, and that's it. There's exceptions, but they tend to fade over the years. Daffodils yeah. kind of multiply, and you get more and more as the years go on.
Some daffodils, not
yeah,
all.
Not all of them, yeah. The smaller ones, and there's ones you can buy specifically for naturalizing. Alliums are in between. There's some that come back every year. The larger ones, we get a couple good years out of them, longer than tulips, but then they start to kind of fade as well. So that's why we're always planting more stuff.
We had a good allium year this year, though.
Yeah, there were thousands.
But the key is also variety, mixing the different varieties and to stretch the season. It's not like you planted 100 of the exact same kind, so they all bloom in a week or two, and then you're done. Like, we had them blooming for over 2 months because we had half a dozen at least different varieties.
And now, Ryan, they have to be deadheaded.
Is that hard? That's just...
You know, just clipping.
It's a clip at the bottom. Because you can't pull it. Because if you pull it, the bullet comes out. So you have to go to the bottom and clip it.
Down.
Mm-hmm. We have to dig in there. And then also in the pergola, all the lilies are coming up. So you have to go in between all the tiger lilies.
Yeah. Like an obstacle course.
Are we saving any this year to dry or get rid of them all?
No, I don't want any. I just want to... We've been there, done that. I want to do something else.
Is Camassia also a been there, done that? Or?
Oh, yeah. That was
naturalizes, though. That's like daffodils.
That was so prolific.
That's Camassia.
Yeah, if you're looking for a good, almost ground cover of very early bluebell-like flowers on tall stalks, plant Camassia. Mm-hmm. It also comes in a pinkish.
It comes in pink, but that's red. There's a couple different shades of blue. There's a darker blue, a lighter blue, almost a purple kind of color, but the blue shades are the same. But their foliage stays for a long time. Alliums come up, and before the flower even comes, the foliage is already half dead. The Camassia looks nice, and it's dark green, and it stays
for a long time. All the lawn off your front?
Mm-hmm. It wasn't that big. Everybody's doing.
And that was a smallish front yard, but it's very charming. Charming.
It's small, so I ripped all that out. And then the next one I did was that little devil strip in the front. Everyone else has grass, and I'm the last house on the street, so I just ripped the grass out there, too, and planted a few bushes in,
too. What do you call it, devil strip?
Yeah, that little piece between the sidewalk and that's what they're called.
Oh, is it? Really?
Yeah. Why? Because if devils has to step over it to get to your house? Because
like nothing ever really grows and down. There's terms in it. In the south, that's what they always call them. And back home, that's what they call them. It's that little, 3 foot strip.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
It's like, always a wasteland.
And like the city owns it, but you have to take care of it. People walk by all the time. So like I didn't put fancy stuff there because I can see people, they'll walk by and look at stuff or little kids pick stuff. So like when I put roses and stuff there, I put like the landscape ones. Like if they pick it or mess with it, I don't care.
Right.
Do that. But it's colorful.
And everybody respects your front yard now.
Oh, everybody comes over and asks me questions, and they see me out there doing it. And I do stuff at night. I mean, here during the day, but I've always done stuff at night. I have like a little headlamp that I wear. So stupid. It's so dumb, but they laugh at me. They think I'm crazy. I have like a little headlamp, like a little miner's headlamp, and it's like 10 o'clock at night in the dark. And you know how when you're like wake up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom, even though you're half asleep, you kind of know how your room is in the layout. So I'm like that out there at night. So I know what's where. Even though you can't see, so I can dig and plant. I have a picture of it. It looks so dumb.
Do you identify the plants like the way Martha does it?
No, I just do it. So I'm planting. I'm like out there planting extra stuff because especially in the fall when it's like bulb season, it's dark by the time I get home.
And so what about the backyard?
There was some in the back and whoever planted stuff there didn't know how to put stuff. So I dug the half dozen azaleas out of the back and moved them to the front.
Uh-huh.
But then I just filled that with all kinds of stuff. And I'll put nicer stuff back there. Like, I like roses a lot. So the fancy roses and all that stuff I put in there. I have some dahlias there that haven't bloomed yet. Lilies. And I pack it. I put way too much stuff in there because I like to just see what grows. And that way, if something dies, there's other stuff in there to fill it in. I have a bunch of hydrangeas in there.
Is that your method, too? Like with trees, especially when you do beds of trees, what you do is the intention to see what will live, and because not everything does.
No, I plant more systematically than that, trying to put trees in the correct places, and trees that grow taller in the back if it has a back. Mm-hmm. But I just got this big shipment from Monrovia on the
done Friday.
Friday.
It's Friday.
Lots of plants, many, many plants. So I've been thinking all weekend about where are they going to go?
That's the thing. She has the room so she can make the big groves of stuff or give everything the proper space.
I can enlarge a bed. I can bring it out another foot or two and it'll be nice. But what's exciting about, for me, for gardening is that it's always changing and things grow in ways that you don't even anticipate. I mean, I can't believe how big our trees are.
And they've grown so quickly this past couple of years.
This year with all the rain and the heat, they are really putting on inches.
Mm-hmm. Is it a leap year? Do they do that? Is it like every other year?
No, the sleep, creep, and leap. Yeah. Yeah. So like the third year after sleep, pineapple. Not leap, not legitimate.
I thought that was a leap year.
Nothing to do with leap year.
The
gardener's saying leap year.
Okay. Yeah.
When you plant something, it like sleeps the first year, then it creeps, and then the third year is when it explodes out. I'm planting big stuff.
So we've had a lot of success with the growth in the gardens, but we're also experiencing massive weed infestation because of the heat and this humidity.
And stuff's burning out quick too. Like the cabbages and the broccoli come up and boom.
Yeah. Did I tell you, I went to Maine for the weekend and boy, oh boy, was there a lot to do. But on the terrace, all that beautiful creeping thyme with the little purple flowers, it has mildew on it.
No.
The mold.
The old one or the new stuff we planted?
Both.
Is it because it's too rainy?
It's too wet. They have not had sun for 27 days.
Wow.
So that's really a different climate from ours here. Right. But also, you know, scary. It's scary that no sun for 26 or 27 days. That's unusual.
And then wasn't the plant just registered at its highest temperature ever?
Yes.
In 3 days in a row?
Yes. It's really, really worrisome.
Everything's swapped. Like back home, it's always dry. We got more rain than ever back in California. Here was the opposite. It's like everything's flip-flopped.
Unbelievable.
Martha Stewart here. As a devoted pet parent and culinary expert, I ensure my cats and dogs are fed the finest nutrition. My premium pet food features air-dried protein inclusion, whole fruits and vegetables, and never any fillers. Martha Stewart pet food formulas make it so easy to satisfy the dietary needs and taste preferences of your pets. Now all six delicious formulas are 50% off. And there's convenient home delivery on Chewy.com. No more lugging heavy bags, and your pets will thrive on the optimal nutrition and great taste.
My name is Johnny B. Good, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, Centratech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courtney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
Kevin, what do you like most about my garden? You know, you spend a lot of time in the garden when you're here. Kevin is my picker. I allow him to pick.
He's been thoroughly trained to pick the right way, though.
I sort of say, here's the vase. I want something in this vase, and he's allowed to pick. But Ryan also picks. But Kevin, you do the best job of picking, I think.
Lily Pond, I tell this story all the time. Martha's going to get bored of hearing me say it. But the first time I went out to Lily Pond, it was that at that time it was primarily a rose garden. And I went through the gates, and on the left-hand side were 3 or 4, maybe 6 pear trees that were, I never get this correct. Is it pollarded? No, they were shaped. They had trunks and
leech,
then
pollarded.
They were like big lollipops.
Topiaries.
They were kind of like topiaries, but they were like 2 stories tall. And you had trained these climbing roses up them, and they just had it was just like a waterwork of all roses. I thought, is that a rose tree? And again, I've worked in an arboretum, so I'm not a complete idiot. And I was just blown away by the whimsy of that. I thought that was amazing. So that was Lily Pond. Turkey Hill, I loved Monet's garden that you were able to approximate. That was like, for me, the best. That was like watching magic. Really, it was just incredible to see how those Siberian iris and the poppies and all of that came together and were like suspended in air. So that was my first sort of training with Martha. Then coming to Bedford and seeing, you're like Lenotre. Yeah, you've got big plans and a big canvas and all of that. But what I really love are these vistas that you're creating with these sight lines with trees. It's just amazing to me to see someone embrace trees in such a way. And I think part of the success of now what you're doing with trees is you're starting things so small. Mm-hmm. So you really got these strong, strong things. So it's nice to watch that kind of growth happen.
Well, when I owned my house on Lily Pond Lane in East Hampton, there was a very good bookseller called Glenn Horowitz.
Right.
Who dealt in rare books. And I would buy rare garden books from him. And I would spend my allowance, my self-imposed allowance at his store. I went every week to see what else I needed.
Mm-hmm.
And I did buy, I think, a second edition of Sir Humphrey Repton's 1811 edition of his garden design book. And it's a 2-volume book. It is one of the most beautiful books I own, and I remember paying, you know, like a phenomenal amount. But I had to have this book because in the book are overlays. So there's like watercolor ink drawings of a beautiful home,
right,
as is. Then you pick up just the house or just the grounds. You pick up this little overlay that's another piece of paper. It's all hand cut, right, all hand pasted in the book. And underneath is Sir Humphrey's rendering of what he would do with the property. So he will take away all the trees and he will put a lake in. And that was his way of his blueprint.
Right.
And then it goes on and on. Some of them have 3 or 4 overlays.
And was it to explain to someone, here's what you'll get in 2 years,
yes,
here's what you'll get in 5?
It was really more like, this is what you'll get.
Mm-hmm.
Different versions of what you could get for his price and his plan. And boy, it was so fantastic. But then I read a lot of his writing too, and what he talked about were alleys of trees, uh-huh, as a mode of axis of vision. So your eye is taken down that row of trees to something, to,
right,
a point in the distance. And so I've been thinking about that ever since I read that book.
Well,
and you learn a lot from accomplished landscape designers who worked without drones, they worked without helicopters, without airplanes, no bird's eye view. They had to think up the bird's eye view.
Because now we're using drones and stuff, and that's great here. Oh, we can see how the property is taking shape in the trees,
yeah,
and how straight we are on the lines.
And they didn't even really have, they had primitive surveyors, mm-hmm, tools in those days, but somehow they got those lines straight, and they got the whole idea of symmetry and axis of vision, they got it right.
It's measuring, and sticks.
String, right, and sticks.
It's the simplest thing, but I think it's a mystery to most people.
It's
like when you do it here, when you did it for the vegetable garden, when you've done it for other things, it's just amazing. But I don't think people think that elemental.
They immediately want to go into like...
Start digging,
putting the plants. Like if you're baking something, you don't just put the ingredients in the oven. You have to mix and do it in a certain order and certain techniques. Yeah. It's the same with that. You have to set all your foundation and everything up first. The plants are like not the afterthought, but they're not the first thought.
Oh, but it was such an eye-opener to get a book like that and realize mistakes you had made, put possibilities for the future. And so this place, this farm, has been such a godsend to me because it gives me an opportunity, no matter which direction I look in, to plant.
Right.
Because there's so much to plant. Now, the big problem is getting people to weed it and take care of it, Ryan.
Taking care of it.
The dahlias, Ryan, are weed infested.
That's because they're so early. We're way ahead.
Oh, I know, but we need to get those weeds out of there tomorrow. Make note. But Ryan gets how many little texts do you get from me in a day?
I don't get any little texts. I get a lot of big texts, long texts. I have to scroll to read them.
But these are the lists, the to-do lists. What's your favorite part about gardening, Kevin?
When we went up to Maine for Memorial Day weekend, I bought a whole bunch of African violets, and when I came back into the city, and you brought them in. I sat on my terrace with, you know, this planter's mat, and I had to repot them all. That was fun. Just doing it was fun. Having my hands in the dirt, and everybody thinks I'm so fancy, but I actually like doing things like that. I would make a terrific weeder. I like leaving someplace cleaner than I found it, and I like the, you know, immediate satisfaction.
I'm going to delay your car this afternoon.
The dahlias need to be nice. Yeah,
and I have some nice new gloves I can loan you.
I'm also very decorative, so there are certain things that I have an eye for where, you know, things can go.
What's your favorite part, Ryan?
I like vegetable gardens. That's my favorite. So, yeah.
His attitude has changed since our new one.
Yeah.
Describe the new one.
Well, the new one's great because it's raised beds. It's easy. We're having problems with the old one we had. Like after a few years or number of years, you kind of change them up a little bit, and we were at that point with the one we had. And so the new one's fantastic. It's new soil, new beds, new sun exposure. So I don't have all the problems you have after a number of years. It's in the experimental phase. I can figure out what's growing well where and stuff, and it's great.
What are you going to do with the old one, Martha?
There's stuff in there. There's squash in there.
Well, there's pumpkins and squash on one side and corn, but corn is really weedy.
That's why I planted corn in the new garden as well. So you got double.
Oh, good. Thank you.
It's right there.
But
it's growing. It's growing like crazy in the old one.
So do you take it like at some point will you decommission it and then let the chickens have it for a while or put the donkeys in there
The chickens will feast in there after the pumpkins. Are they growing well? The pumpkins. I forgot to
so
look.
Fast.
Oh, good.
We added some of that new seed that you.
Oh, good.
This is the first year I've ever heard this because every year I hear Martha say, where are my pumpkins?
Yeah. Because we move them around. Every year they've got different spots. And then the past couple of years we had all the rain. This year we have none. So then there's always something. So this year they're growing great so far.
Well, I just want to have some really big Turkey Hill sized pumpkins this year because I never grew better pumpkins than a Turkey Hill.
What's your favorite part of gardening?
My favorite part is actually conceptualizing. Finding plant material. I really like to look for plant material.
Yeah.
I like to go to all the nurseries in Maine. Oh, I found three weeping camperdown elms. Oh, over the weekend at Surrey Gardens. Mm-hmm. And I bought three. One is smaller than the other two. Like a nice matched pair. So think of where a matched pair of camperdowns can go here.
Okay.
I'm going to bring them here.
All right.
And one smaller one.
You can put at least one if it's depending on the size by the tenant house, by the new paths and stuff in there.
Yeah, probably.
Especially since everything lost all the shade when we cut down all the spruce, so it's sunny. So having something there, a little bit of shade would help.
It already has two in front by that house.
Mm-hmm. It has one on each side, so that would match it. They're nice.
Yeah, it might be beautiful. And so I like doing that. I like finding the material.
Plant shopping is one of the most fun things to do with Martha.
Yeah.
We have plans, like be it a plant sale, a store, whatever. We have all these little plans, or like when you go to Trade Secrets. And she goes through so quickly. It's like been like 5 minutes and she's already picked out 1,000 things and is done. It's so much fun.
My bad habit. But I really do love to buy new plants and different plants and keep records of them and see how they grow.
Uh-huh.
And I love to make a new garden. And now I'm fixing up the Tenon House Garden here in Bedford. And Pete and Fernando, these are two guys who have worked for me for quite a few years. They are building the nicest paths.
Fantastic. Have you seen them?
And they're having a great time doing it. The smiles on their faces. Yeah. Funny. They're having a great...
We're eliminating grass as much as I can. I want to get rid of the grass here because I'd rather have plants. It's a lot of weeding, but it's easier than mowing in a funny way. Easier than mowing, and it enables us to get even more plant variety in the gardens here.
Right.
I like diversity and variety.
Which is better, because plants all get sick, but like grass gets sick, the whole thing gets sick, and it looks ugly. Yeah. Like if plants, you have a whole garden, you know, something might get sick, but it's not the whole thing, and it doesn't spread. It's not as much of a problem.
I don't think of many things as dying here. When they get too big, how do you... Because you could basically open up your own nursery if you wanted to between the peonies and all those other things.
Yeah.
So how do you go into the garden and take things out?
Oftentimes.
You move them.
Because the garden that you just referenced, that was like, seemed impenetrable to me. Now these paths are crossing through it and all that. And
but it's looking more open.
Yeah.
Just because we have like three new paths. And it's going to look nicer and nicer and nicer, I promise you. And thinning out. I mean, we have one plant that is rampant in some of our gardens here called Thalictrum.
Oh,
And what's the common name for Thalictrum?
Meadow rue.
Oh, meadow rue. But our Thalictrum doesn't grow like a normal meadow rue.
We have the giant one that's like 10 feet tall.
Yeah, 10, 11 feet tall with little tiny purple flowers on the tips. Mm-hmm. And
it's pretty, but it doesn't spread. It spreads by seed. So it's just, if you get in the wrong spot, it's so big.
And you can't pull it out. It's the roots are like embedded into the ground. So we have a lot of Thalictrum to kind of get rid of. And it's very prolific. It's a crazy plant. But if you're looking for a good background plant, Thalictrum is a very nice one.
I think it took off because it's where all the spruce
also
were.
Also, Aruncus. Isn't Aruncus the other one
that's
a nice
background?
That's
the one with the white. Yeah,
by white plumes.
Yeah, the white. And they're harder to find. The giant one's harder to find. You can find the little dwarf ones.
But we do have the giant.
We do have the regular, the bigger
ones. And that's also very nice in the back of a border or back of a garden.
That's goat's beard.
Yeah, goat's beard. Those are two plants that I love to grow. Hostas, we just did a show on our television, Roku television show, about hostas and their propagation and their dividing and their replanting. And boy, they're a beautiful
plant.
They've
done fantastic.
They're like
for
a good investment.
They are an amazing investment. From one plant that must have been maybe 6 years old, we got how many? 20?
Oh, like two dozen, yeah.
Oh, 20 or
what?
30.
It was a huge
baby plants
thing we broke up.
Yeah.
And how do you break it up? Because I've seen those. They are, how do you, saw them?
Or a knife? Or tomato knife?
Everybody loves them.
What time of year do you do this split?
In this early summer, late spring.
So you do get leaves out of them?
Oh, yeah.
Just have to keep the deer away from us. Your only real problem.
Your cotinus this year are unbelievable.
Well, I have been collecting cotinus now for quite a few years, and whenever I see an unusual shade, I don't know them by name, but I buy one or two of every variety that I see, and I'm making headway because, boy, that front entrance is so beautiful this year.
The front's great. The between the fields is fantastic. Back of the summer house has more.
Is there any cotinus that's actually white? So it really, because they call it smoke bush, right?
Right.
So is there any that's actually the color of smoke?
Not really. There's pale, but I wouldn't say.
No.
No, they can be kind of grayish after a while. They fade a bit, but not.
But smoke bush sends out these racemes of very fluffy flowers, pale pink, dark maroon.
Greenish shades.
Yeah, whitish, pale greenish chartreuse color. They're quite beautiful. So I'm just keep looking for new ones.
And they're available more readily now. Because I remember every time you would discover one, it was like finding a diamond. And now they seem to be...
Just like the other dark, when you're like growing all the nine bark, that's becoming more available in all different shades and colors and leaf sizes and shapes. It's great. We have that all around the pool.
Do you have any idea
more coming in?
Why it's called nine bark?
Because when it gets bigger like the other ones, it peels. It has all the different layers, kind of like how a birch tree does. So I guess
is it nine layers?
Apparently to somebody it's nine layers, but it has, and each layer is like a different shade.
So speaking of birch trees, you just mentioned
another one.
A new birch tree just arrived at the back gate today. A nice 12-foot birch tree.
We get these mystery birch trees a month, and we've never seen one. I haven't seen one delivered.
Martha,
they're just there.
You don't know who like the person is?
Yeah, we get it. There's like a little note.
Oh, there's
on
a
it.
Note.
Yeah.
Yeah, so now we have 9.
Yeah, so we're supposed to have 12 total.
12 by the eventually. End of the year. So we should make sure that gets into the ground tomorrow. Martha Stewart here. As a devoted pet parent and culinary expert, I ensure my cats and dogs are fed the finest nutrition. My premium pet food features air-dried protein inclusion, whole fruits and vegetables, and never any fillers. Martha Stewart pet food formulas make it so easy to satisfy the dietary needs and taste preferences of your pets. Now all 6 delicious formulas are 50% off. And there's convenient home delivery on Chewy.com. No more lugging heavy bags, and your pets will thrive on the optimal nutrition and great taste.
My name is Johnny B. Good, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, CentraTech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. It is 2024, and we're going to get through this together, folks. My campaign promise to all of you here on Next Question is going to be a good time the whole time, we hope. I have some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring Kris Jenner, who's got some words of wisdom for me on being a good grandmother, or in her case, a good lovey.
You know, you start thinking of what you want your grandmother name to be. Like, are they going to call me grandma like I called my grandmother? So I got to choose my name, which is now Lovey.
I'll also be joined by Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, to name a few. So come on in and take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood.
I loved it. Your energy and joy.
I'm squeezing every minute I can for you out of this season of Next Question.
Last question, I promise. You have to go. I have to go. But it's been so fun. And I can't wait for you to hear it. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Another thing that we're doing here at the farm, which really does fascinate people, is that we are growing most of our trees and shrubs from rooted cuttings. So we're going to places like JPLN out in Oregon. Mm-hmm. We read their catalog assiduously, and then we order vast quantities of seedling trees. Mm-hmm. We also look at mussers
from the boxwood is what we get there, yeah. And then a bunch of evergreens come from them as well.
So we now have one beautiful garden just filled with boxwood, and they're doing well.
They're doing very well.
Especially this rain is helping. We don't have to water so often. And it goes from $1 a cutting or $1.15 a cutting to, in a year, it's worth more like about $20. And then the second year, it's worth more like $60. Mm-hmm. And then the third year, it could be worth, you know, way over $100 for one ball boxwood. But very nice for experimenting with, because it's not a lot to take care of.
No, once you get them in the ground, it's fairly hands-off, other than weeding and watering and, you know, trim them twice a year, probably. Yeah. That's it.
How do you decide which ones you're going to raise from seedlings?
Whatever catches my eye in the catalog. Many different kinds of oak trees, different kinds of maple trees. And I look for, you know, durability.
Do you look for lifespan?
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. The older, the better. I want trees that'll last for a long, long time. So we've been having fun with that. And that's something that everybody should really pay attention to, because without reforestation and so much denuding of the landscape, we're going to be in more and more, even more trouble than we are, because of the pollution and because of fresh air.
People don't realize trees have a lifespan. They're not going to be there for hundreds of years, most of the trees. So you have to replenish them. And if they're clearing everything out between them and underneath them, they're not going to do that naturally.
One of the things that I will never forget is when you were going to buy this farm, you sent people in to check the soil. So it seems like if you're going to buy a house or a yard, you know, if you're going to start a garden or just invest in land, it seems like it would make sense to test the soil and plant a tree.
Right. And very important. You have to do that before you do anything else.
But I don't think most people think that way. They really don't.
Trees are
hard for people to grasp.
Trees were the first thing I tell people when they buy a house, like before you like start painting your walls inside and redecorating, plant a tree outside. Like within the first couple of years, if you have to, you can move it. Just get it to start growing.
But I have a friend who bought a virtual arboretum, a famous man who loved trees, and he planted many, many, many different kinds of trees. And she has about maybe 40 acres, but many of them have specimen trees. The most spectacular are the beech trees. And now with this infestation, there's some disease.
For the beech, the nematode?
Yep, attacking the beech trees. She's going to lose her specimen trees on her property.
So awful.
Which will really make that property less valuable.
Valuable, yeah.
It's a very sad story.
Is there always something attacking trees? Like every year, I know one, like wasn't Dutch elm a thing? I mean, I know it was a thing.
Well, it wiped out generations of Dutch elm.
And last year you had the ash thing,
the ash thing was extremely serious. You can't just call it the ash thing because it killed every single ash tree on this property, which is more like 400 or 500 trees. I didn't even count them yet.
But is that a constant thing? Is there always a blight of some sort?
I think now that it's more of a global, stuff just moves globally, there's that much more where things establish themselves in different areas, so it kind of takes over. So it's more happening more likely now.
Wow. You have your tree people coming in to sort of safeguard what you can.
We use a company locally called Save a Tree, and I've been working with them for a long, long time. And you have to really kind of latch on to somebody who's accomplished and a really good tree man,
right,
to get them to really pay attention to each and every tree.
And they use this property as a test too, because they have much stuff here, so
many
see stuff.
Kinds of
they
trees.
Can see how many we have and what's happening. So mm-hmm. And they compare it to like the neighborhood and stuff, because sometimes we'll get hit hard and other places won't, and vice versa. So
we have had the ash tree problem. Now we're having the beech tree problem. And then we had the boxwood problem, and we found a solution for that, the top boxes. But ash tree, no solution. Beeches, I'm really worried about, because I kind of stupidly, now in retrospect, planted the Dawick purple beech hedge all around my pool. And it's a lot of, that was, how many different trees?
A couple hundred in there.
Yeah, 400, 500. And this year, the tops came and the bottoms came and nothing in the middle. Mm-hmm. And they've been gradually opening up, but I'm terrified about them.
But that's the problem, because they don't have that many leaves. So during the winter, them surviving into spring. So next spring is going to be the real test of like what they are looking at.
God, gardening really is, it's like just caregiving.
They're alive and they can't tell you what's wrong with them other than looking at them. You know, a pet can...
Yeah.
Meow or bark sometimes, or you can tell more so. Plant, you actually have to really pay attention.
You have to.
Gardeners are the ultimate optimists.
But there are lots and lots of good articles about the care of all these. I've been reading the British Horticultural magazines. I've been reading the Garden Club of America magazine. That's very useful. Mm-hmm. I read Horticulture magazine. What do you read?
I steal them from your desk and read them when I'm in the kitchen eating.
Good.
So all the same.
Please do, because the more you read and the more you understand and the more you talk to other people about your occupation, which is gardener, the more you're going to be able to take care of all these beautiful plants. And it is a shame when you lose something because of either a lack of care or ignorance when it could have been saved. But then the ash tree, nobody could save it. Nobody could save the ash, the green
and
ash.
And the way it works, once you see it, it's already too late.
Yeah. And the beaches too. I hope that that gets under control because those are magnificent trees.
We did good with the boxwood, so maybe we'll look out because we looked out on the boxwood on our end here.
Majestic.
But the boxwoods need to be pruned, Ryan. Mm-hmm.
Isn't that something you do in the fall? You only do that twice a year.
Well, now there's so much rain. If we do a little bit of shaping, it'll be, I think, beneficial for them.
It's better doing it a little bit earlier, not like right before winter.
That's so therapeutic to do the shaping thing, grooming and shaping.
So Kevin's coming up to weed. He's coming up to groom and shape all the boxwoods.
So you see, it's nice to involve your friends and to be in a very conversive mood with anybody who's taking care of your plants because you're just going to have better plants as a result. It's something that we all love, and if you do take gardening seriously, there are many, many things you can do to make your gardens even more beautiful. And we're going to continue to talk to gardeners. We just had the Zone 3 meeting here with the Garden Club of America.
They loved it.
150 gardeners came, and I had five of my gardeners, including Kevin, take smaller groups around the property to show them.
They loved it. The structure and the actual planning and the longevity and the fact that it's just so many different gardens and each one has its own different look and stuff.
The variety of what you have. It really is like a botanical garden.
Well, it is a lot of fun, and I encourage everyone listening to start a garden if you haven't, nurture those gardens if you have, and feed and water and spend
and
time.
Weed. Yeah.
And especially weed and spend time in your gardens. Well, thanks guys for talking. Anything else you'd like to say, Ryan?
No, that's good. I have weeding to do, I guess.
Okay. You better get out there. Okay. Well, we've had a nice chat.
We have.
And I hope you've enjoyed this impromptu get together with Ryan McAllister, gardener at Cantichoke Corners, and Kevin Sharkey, design director of Martha Stewart Living. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
We will have them on again if you like them. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Martha Stewart here. As a devoted pet parent and culinary expert, I ensure my cats and dogs are fed the finest nutrition. My premium pet food features air-dried protein inclusion, whole fruits and vegetables, and never any fillers. Martha Stewart pet food formulas make it so easy to satisfy the dietary needs and taste preferences of your pets. Now all six delicious formulas are 50% off. And there's convenient home delivery on Chewy.com. No more lugging heavy bags, and your pets will thrive on the optimal nutrition and great taste.
I'm Johnny B. Good, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My whole life, I've been told this one story about my family, about how my great-great-grandmother was killed by the mafia back in Sicily. I was never sure if it was true, so I decided to find out. And even though my Uncle Jimmy told me I'd only be making the vendetta worse, I'm going to Sicily anyway. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.